Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. As always, Danny Kelly joined us, but we had a bit of an international flavour to our chat today. He was very keen to tell us about a game that took place yesterday, which he did between two of the lower ranked nations of the world. We were also joined in the studio by Ignacio Villarroel. You may not know the name, but you'll be aware of the club he's the vice president of. And that is River Plate, the Buenos Aires Argentinian giants. And he's in the UK on a flying visit. And he met him when he was in Buenos Aires. Oh, yeah. So, as promised, he popped in to see us for an interesting chat, telling us about the next top player they're expecting to sell in Europe, potentially. And Jeff Norcott joined us in the studio. A serious chat about whether it's still worth going to university. And he talked about the S-Houser he involved in the MK Dons
few laughs in there
Wimbledon
too.
Game recently. So we had a chat.
We did.
Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Andy.
Yes, good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. And unfortunately, I was busy Saturday night, as you do. Saturday night, not the most convenient time for football.
Oh, OK. You should have had a word with the FA. I know. What they could do. Maybe kick off a bit earlier.
I recorded the highlights and I had to put my parental guidance code to access it. And I was thinking, is it child protected because the new shirts cost so much, or how bad we were? I can't understand.
We weren't that bad. We weren't great, but we weren't that bad.
I thought we were it's hard from the highest. I thought we were disappointing, really. They seem to have most of the good chances.
You're talking about kickoff times and it not being convenient for you. I've mentioned it before. This, when we were doing Goal magazine, we did a special thing on the serious non-league groundhoppers. Not just the people who do the football league grounds, but attempt to do all the grounds in the country, all the non-league grounds. And one guy had travelled about 250 miles for this game, and the trains were messed up, and it was one of the final ones he needed to tick off, and it wasn't an easy place to get to, this groundhopper. And so by the time he got there, they were 6 minutes into the match, and he was inconsolable to the point where he lost his head completely, ran onto the field, and had said to the referee, could you possibly start the game again?
Well, doesn't it count if he doesn't see the whole game?
We had to be there from the start. But obviously, that was the parameters he set himself. But what about that? Ran onto the pitch to say to the ref, you're going to have to start this again. I've come 250 miles and only four more to tick off for the Isthmian League South or whatever it was.
It's good.
Bonkers. Couple of things to get you going on this afternoon. One of which was biggest gaps between goals. If you've had a stellar Sunday morning, Saturday afternoon career, but not really been a regular goal scorer, what was the biggest gap between goals? Maybe it was you, maybe it was a teammate. We were just wondering because Macaulay Bond turned out was Zimbabwe and scored his first goal in 10 years in a 2-2 draw with Zambia. Cambridge striker, 28, last struck on the international stage in 2014 against Morocco.
It's quite a gap.
A decade between goals. So if you've had a longer one or one like that, if you can kind of chart it back to your first and last goals for your team, we would love to know. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSH&J. 03717223344. The other thing, Andy, was I thought I'd ask about remarkable collapses in sporting terms, because England's women were playing a T20 against New Zealand. They needed to get 156, and they found themselves needing 29 runs from 29 balls.
I mean, normally that's
with eight wickets left.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Eight wickets left, 29 runs, 29 balls. But then they lost one of the players for 71. Then they lost six for 25. That's amazing.
Must have been watching the men.
They needed eight from the last over, but didn't do it. I mean, that is staggering, isn't it? I mean, wow. Eight wickets left, 29 runs from 29 balls, whether it was football, cricket, whatever. Let's have some spectacular collapses. Positions it was almost impossible to lose from, but somehow you or your team still managed it. 0371 722 3344, talksport.com, text 81089, tweet to TSHNJ. You ever tried to punch yourself on the nose?
Not lately.
Toto Wolff says he's so upset at the moment the way it's going for Mercedes that he wants to punch himself on the nose. But I think as an act, it's quite difficult, isn't
it? Is, really.
Because you'd never get that sufficient. You're always going to sort of withdraw slightly. Like,
yeah,
be
as you get there, you don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to go full follow through.
You're suddenly
going to
stop. Anyway, something we'll be discussing when we talk F1. A little bit later on.
We're going to get any texts. Oh, yes. Hello,
Charlie Baker was here. He said, when was the last time you punched yourself on the nose? One of Charlie's choice. But I don't think we'll bother doing that.
I don't think
today.
That's ever happened. No. Kai Havertz, though, he's warned. I love a warning.
Yeah.
He's warned Scotland that New Look Germany are gunning for them.
He
in
hasn't
the
warned them, has he? It's tabloidese.
No, he hasn't warned them at all. We don't have long to the opening game against Scotland. It's extremely important that every player knows his role in the team. The Euros are fast approaching. We need a result like that. We needed a result like that. We have to be satisfied. We've made a good step forward. It's an important step forward. There's nothing about warning there. They haven't warned Scotland at all.
No, but that's not the way it works in a tabloid, is it? You know, someone says something like, I think we can beat them on Saturday, and it says, Kai Havertz fires a broadside. Only in a tabloid newspaper do people fire a broadside.
Never happened.
Yeah, it never happens. Disappointing stat of the day for me. We had a Ferrari 1-2, of course, in the Australian Grand Prix. Mm. So I thought I'd look it up. I said, well, I wonder when the last time was that we had a Ferrari 1-2.
When was it?
2 years ago.
Oh, well,
it was a bit one of those stats where you look at it and you go,
so not that long
enough.
A gap like
that. Won't bother bringing that up then, although technically I have. Yeah. Because you're expecting to go back. I think before that, there'd not been that many. But anyway, that's not the point.
Have you noticed since Luke Littler, the papers, the tabloids, they just can't stop finding
young players. People.
Darts wonder kid Kai Tiffin is on his way to emulating his hero Littler after winning his first adult tournament at the age of 8. It's ridiculous.
He's been playing since he was 3.
It's mad, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, we've been finding lots of those. Although Luke has trademarked the nuke, not the atomic weapon, obviously. Someone got there before him, but the nickname
if
the nuke.
If you want to fire a nuclear weapon, you've got to get Luke Littler's permission.
North Korea are not going to be happy, are they? But Luke, this is always the same. Anybody who becomes famous looks to trademark their name or their nickname. And it's the intellectual.
I trademarked, what's the point?
Yes, that's good. Okay, well done. The Intellectual Property Office, you contact them for clearance. Mm. You want to put your stamp on your own merchandise. And they always do this, the papers, when they get hold of this story, because there's some fairly unlikely products that Luke will be selling. For example, he can put it on soap, cologne and deodorant. It'd be like the nuke pour on with a faint whiff of kebab, I would imagine. Slightly oniony breath.
He says he only had a kebab once.
Well, yeah, it's an old joke, isn't it? You eat one kebab, to paraphrase it. Personalised footwear. He can put the nuke on. T-shirts, short-sleeve shirts, pyjamas and slippers. Okay. It covers dart boards, flights, wallets for the arrows and dart-related games. That makes a bit more sense, doesn't it? I can't see him bringing out the great smell of Luke Littler. I don't know. I've never smelt him.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, we haven't got a full Premier League programme to reflect on, as we always do in this slot with Danny Kelly, but we have got a sort of middling England performance and another one to look forward to tomorrow against Belgium. And Danny has watched Belgium in action the last couple of days for reasons he'll explain. But, of course, we still need our helping of Danny. And so here he is. Good afternoon, Danny.
Good afternoon, chaps. How's everything all right? Good.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Very husky today.
So, I'm just interested.
Not as husky as you, Andy. I'm always deeply impressed with your sort of Barry White impression. It's very good.
To get your take on that England performance, what we learned from it, and how that might sort of feed into tomorrow and the selection, Danny.
Look, what I'm going to say is contradictory. Two things. The first one is don't panic, Mr. Captain Mannerin. England were okay against a very good team, and England without Kane and Saka is not the England that we'll see in the European Championships. On the other hand, do panic, Mr. Mannering, because the problem for England's team under Southgate hasn't really changed. They've never quite got around the fact that the centre-backs are not good enough to inspire confidence in the rest of the team, so you have to cover for them in midfield. Mm. And oddly enough, except for the 2 years when Calvin Phillips was in the team, where they got the balance right by having an out-and-out defensive midfielder, it's always slightly nebulous. What's he going to do about covering those centre-backs in midfield? Look, Harry Maguire can stand on his record. He's totally entitled to do that. Say, look, these are the places we've reached with me and the team. But he still makes mistakes that cause the team to shake slightly. The obvious solution in a normal world would be to move Stones into defensive midfield, but then you just weaken the back four even further.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. And then he's got to think about, you know, Phillips is the only... You can't pick Phillips because he's not playing, you know. And in the current parlance, without getting a whiteboard out on the radio because it's really dull, you know, midfield threes are a 4, an 8 and a 10. Sorry, a 6, an 8 and a 10. Mm. England haven't got a natural 6.
Yeah.
So either Declan Rice is going to have to play absolutely... determinedly and specifically as a defensive midfielder.
Which is a waste of his talent, as we see at Arsenal.
But same thing, with Jude Bellingham.
Sure.
Same thing with Jude Bellingham. Mm. But they're going to have to find a way to get around this, because sooner or later, against the better teams, and Brazil have had a terrible time recently, but they've got good players, that stress in the middle of England's defence becomes a problem. And you saw it yourselves in the game. The longer the game went on, the more likely Brazil were to score, I thought, because they'd worked out where England were weak.
Yeah.
If your strengths are in attack, though, isn't that where England should be concentrating? You often feel with Southgate that it's just... But we never seem to be the sum of our parts.
It's quite difficult as an international manager to be one of those, you know, you score three, but we'll score four. We're not worried about how many
Which is why so many of them are conservative, Paul. We saw France with their bewildering array of attacking talent, losing 2-0 at home to Germany. Same problem there. The coach is so conservative that he's not getting the absolute best out of the team. They will argue, of course, Antoine Griezmann missed his first game for about, I think, 80-something internationals. Incredible. The natural link between their midfield and their attack. But we're not here to talk about France, but honestly, while Deschamps continues to not pick William Saliba, he deserves everything he gets, frankly.
Well, which brings us on to what he could do tomorrow, which he probably won't do. I mean, I think Dave Kibb was right about today in The Sun. He says there will be a collective groan when Jordan Henderson finds himself alongside Declan Rice in that midfield from England fans.
I think he's got to look at him, though, because he doesn't know how he's doing, having played out in Saudi, having played in Holland. He needs to see him in a competitive game.
Okay, that's true. I mean, the other alternative is to throw your lot in. I mean, it was only a brief cameo, but we've seen him at Manchester United. And, of course, Sir Bobby Robson did it all those years ago in the Czechoslovakia game before the World Cup with Paul Gascoigne, threw him in and realised what he was capable of, and that's... Kobbie Mainoo, of course, who you could put in that six role, and showed enough the other day. I mean, look, he's a very young, raw player, but he is playing for a top Premier League
club. His first touch was amazing, wasn't it, that turn?
So, I mean, that's the bold choice, but it's unlikely to... I mean, only Gareth will know whether that's right
or
not.
Well, Gareth made a point of mentioning Jordan Henderson after the game. He said, who knows how it would have been if we'd had Harry Kane, or Jordan Henderson. So he's clearly prepared to come in off his Jordan Henderson run-up. Mainoo's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he genuinely is, I think, quite a proper number six. He is a defensive-minded player who also has got great technical skills. I wonder whether this tournament's come 12 months too early for him, but we won't know unless he gets a proper chance. I thought he did pretty well. Even though Brazil were coming more into the game, I thought he did pretty well. But you're right, Jordan Henderson, I guess, will play. But the problem then for Gareth is, if he plays and it doesn't go well, when does he get a chance to try anybody else? I mean, we're then into the games immediately before the tournament, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
He's got three games before he has to name his team, I believe.
Three games before he names it. I thought he names it and then they have two friendlies.
Is that the way around it?
The squad, that's
true of
everybody.
You have to name, the way it's worked out, Andy, is you have to name the squad now before the last friendlies, before the tournament. I mean, it's just a quirk of this tournament, but it is odd, yeah.
The other question is about Phil Foden, watching him play and finding a way to make him effective in a situation where Jude Bellingham's maybe playing in his favourite position. It was interesting to Gareth was saying, you know, we were up against high quality opposition, but so is Ian when he's in the Champions League and he finds a way to get on the ball there. So no touches in the opposition box, and it's again such a waste of a great talent. We have to find a way for those two to be as effective as each other.
I guess my first thought about this, and I'm happy to take contrary ideas, is to start him where he starts from Manchester City. I see people talking about him playing as a 10. He and Bellingham are going to run into each other there. I guess start him out left and see, you know, tell him to do what he does naturally for Manchester City. And again, this would have all, I think the performance of Foden would have seemed different if Saka and Kane had been available, because you're getting more natural forward momentum. You'll get it probably with Kane leading the line. You're getting more touches in the box. But I wouldn't mess too much with Foden. Trying to find a square peg position for him is not the deal. Start him where he's good, where he has genuinely started from Manchester City, although they move him around. They're a better team than England, aren't they? Let's be truthful. He's got to play, hasn't he? Mm. And so I'd start him left, Saka right, and let Bellingham, if he's going to be the 10, let him run it, unless we end up with, if the Operation Henderson goes wrong and you end up with Rice and Bellingham pivoting, and then it's someone, I don't know, Madison or someone coming in at 10. Mm. Either way, I wouldn't mess too much with Foden, wouldn't mess too much with his head. Just say, play the game you've been playing so well, because he's a good enough player to affect the matches.
Ben Chilwell's coming for a bit of heat since the game. Mm. The general feeling that he wasn't that impressive. He's coming back off a long injury.
He hasn't played a lot of football.
As is Madison. Again, a player that isn't quite as good as he was before that,
that's correct.
The trouble is, Chilwell probably does need game time. Whether he should be getting it in internationals, I don't know. But he is just not that match sharp at the moment. We don't have a lot of options at left back.
Well, here we go again. I mentioned somebody on this very slot about 3 weeks ago. I mentioned him last night on Trans-Europe Express, and the producer threatened to sack me. Statistically, the left-sided defender, who is English qualified, getting the most balls into the box, doing the most damage up front, is Alfie Doughty of Luton.
Oh, interesting.
And that's what I suggested, as if England play a double defensive pivot and therefore the fullbacks are getting that far forward, then I would suggest that Doughty is worth looking at, because he whips the ball in first time, every time, and he arrives at the right moment to do it. Now, I know this makes me sound like a swivel-eyed loon. I really do. But, you know, the solutions that England have tried at left back aren't entirely correct. And it's not Chilwell's fault he's been injured for so long. Of course it isn't. But we've got somebody who's bouncing up and down that touchline, bashing the ball into the middle, but he happens to play for Luton. And I suppose, who was the last person who played for England from Luton? Ricky Hill? The one for the teenagers,
Fozzie,
yeah.
Fozzie, maybe? Mick Harford or Foster? It probably would have been that sort of era, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a long time ago,
The Luton fans will tell us, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Chilwell anyway, gets
I've said it now. I've risked my reputation forever.
No,
I've said it.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm sure the Luton fans are saying, yeah, right, well said, Danny. We never get a look in because he plays for an unfashionable club, as they say. Mm-hmm.
But if Chilwell gets
what. Oh, yeah,
sorry,
please.
Danny. I say if he gets enough football between now and the end of the season, it should be okay.
That's probably, you know, because is Luke Young definitely gone now for this season?
Luke Shaw.
Sorry, Luke Shaw. Luke Young has gone, years. Yeah.
I think Luke Shaw is, I think he's going to put him in the squad if he looks like he's fit enough to play a part.
He said, but he is an injury risk nearly all the time just now, isn't he?
Both of them are an injury risk.
I mean, you've got Trippier who plays on the left. It'd be interested to see if Rico Lewis, who's been called him, plays on the right. I mean, he probably won't start on the right, but he could well feature there. It's an interesting call-up, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, another one who's just, you know, the ceiling of his talent is completely unknown to us, a bit like Mainoo. And these young men, I won't call them boys, it's disparaging, these young men, they come into a team and suddenly they blossom in front of you. And if either one of those could do that, there would be another weapon that Southgate has. As you say, Andy, I understand entirely why national team managers are, you know, loath to be too attacking, because the record shows that it's usually the best defensive teams that win these big tournaments, and B, they don't have time to be getting into fancy system work with forward players. So you pick what's known to you and the system that's known to you and the players who've served you well. I totally understand that. But maybe maybe that's the thing that stopped Gareth getting across the line. I mean, I'm not suggesting it is, that because they've lost in these big tournaments recently to some really good teams. Italy was the obvious one where they probably could have been more attacking and would have won the game.
It's just frustrating when you've got players who shine for Real Madrid, players who shine for Manchester City.
Yeah.
You want to see that when they put an England shirt on, and sometimes we don't.
You'd love to see that kind of, as you say, they have a great deal of prep time. If you could have the quality of the players that we have in key positions, and you could show the flexibility in a system that they all shine, that would be great. But it probably, I'm sure Gareth will sit here and say, yeah, that sounds great, but it's not quite as easy to do as that. But anyway, we'll continue.
You'll probably blame Jimmy Floyd, say Hasselbank's not doing it on the pitch there.
Right. You had a look at Belgium the other day, so we'll feed into how they might sort of cause England problems tomorrow night at Wembley, and considering the sort of team we're going to put out, I think Doku immediately comes to mind if we've got an emergency right back there. But anyway, Danny Kelly's with us. I know he's very keen to talk about the Virgin Islands derby.
I really am. I'll tell you why in a second as well.
Okay,
great.
Right. So don't touch
also, that. Also, it is connected to something that Charlie Baker of that parish would not be happy if I didn't mention the link to that.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Danny Kelly is with us. We are talking England and more. Just before we get into Belgium, who you saw play Ireland, Danny, we've been hearing from Ashley Cole today, who's been inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame. And, what we wouldn't give for a left-back of that quality at the moment. Your mind goes back, and you think, really, there is a standout performance from him in an England shirt. That was 2004 against Cristiano Ronaldo, when he was just... It was just one of the great defensive performances by an England player of recent years.
And given that he was a player who England relied on, to get forward as well, that day when he really was tasked with stopping Cristiano Ronaldo is something else. But look, this can be no surprise to anybody. He was just a brilliant, brilliant footballer. England were well for about as long as I can remember. Kenny Sansom, then Stuart Pearce, then Ashley Cole, and then we've fallen off a bit of a cliff left back wise since then, haven't we?
No, that is very true. You saw a lot of him, Andy, didn't
quality
you?
Quality player, very good.
I mean, they've got new inductees, they're asking people to vote, and I won't go through them all, but Solaire's is on there, Robbie Fowler, David Silva, Yaya Touré, John Terry, I thought had already been inducted, but Van der Sar, Fabregas, Defoe, etc., Andy Cole. So there's, people can go and vote for their next inductee. So let's move on then to Belgium. We play England tomorrow night at Wembley.
Yeah.
So you had a look at them playing against Ireland at the weekend. And
yeah.
Ireland did pretty well. Had the better chances than what I saw.
Well, they were clearly freed from whatever cloud that Stephen Kenny had put over them, and John O'Shea got the team to play pretty fluently. They were slightly the better team, I think, than Belgium on the day, and they missed a penalty, of course. Evan Ferguson missed a penalty. That was justice, though. It wasn't really a penalty, so that was probably justice. The thing was that they didn't have their very best players on the pitch, Belgium. Lukaku started on the bench. Lukaku stayed on the bench. Doku started on the bench, and Meunier only came on as well. They're definitely a team in transition, Belgium, and their weakness is at centre-back as well, where De Winter and Wout Faes of Leicester just don't mean... I suspect Jan Vertonghen, who must be 100 years of age, will play in this game because he is still their best central defender, who's on the bench the other night. The interesting thing for England will be if the Belgium coach can work up the chutzpah, the cojones, to pair Leipzig's Loïs Openda with Lukaku up front. Then we'll see the stuff that England's central defenders are made of. Openda played pretty well. But there is a talk, I think, among the Belgian journalists that they should start the two of them. Even if it means going something as old-fashioned as 4-4-2. And if they do, we might see something different. But Belgium, they're really... In the way that Portugal are never really in transition because they just keep renewing their talent, Belgium's gold generation has gone now. We'll have to be honest about that. And England have got every chance against this Belgian team, let's be honest.
Where was De Bruyne? Is he around? Is he fit? Is he in the squad?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't anywhere to be seen.
Okay, that makes a difference.
No. Yeah, he's a big miss. But he's playing his way back in, isn't he?
Yeah, they didn't. He wasn't anywhere to be seen, I'm afraid. They played a midfield of Vermeeren, Vranks and Tielemans. I mean, hardly likely to send you, rushing for the smelling salts.
Yeah. Bad result for Scotland. We should just mention that in passing, because I know it was a good few days ago, but losing can become a habit, and a lot of the players have been saying since Andy Robinson said, "We know we got to break this." I mean, that was a bit of end up being a bit of a kick in with a couple of late goals. Well, they're a very good side, Holland. It's no disgrace. Yeah. You don't want to go into a tournament off the back of some thumpings, do you?
Steve Clark needs to address this now. I think they've lost every game since they qualified. Someone will put me right if I've got that completely incorrect, but I think they've lost every game since they qualified, and that wasn't good. But, you know, Holland, they didn't have all their best players, but they had plenty for Scotland on the night. And they just need to have a game where they dig in, win by the odd goal to restore confidence. Because the problem for them is that they start their tournament against the host, Germany.
Absolutely.
And so, they need to go into that game and not lose it, really, because otherwise the famous eight ball, you are well behind it, aren't you, if you lose the first game in any tournament.
We'll talk about Germany's performance at the weekend with Andy Brassel a little bit later.
Good game for Wales tomorrow night, wasn't it?
All the build-up to that tomorrow, we'll be getting a Polish angle on that game as well, getting a feel for what Wales are up against tomorrow evening. But a huge night, of course, for Wales tomorrow evening.
Well, if the crowd was up for it as they were for the game against Finland, Finland were beaten after the national anthems.
Yeah.
You can go too far, like Brazil in the semi-final of the World Cup when they were the host, but the crowd raised the team quite obviously. And, you know, Andy will tell you, they're just a better team now that Gareth Bale, my favourite footballer of the last 20 years, is no longer being forced to go through the motions up front for them. Yeah. They're a better team.
Danny, before we let you go, let's find out then about the Virgin Islands derby.
Very quickly, the bottom three teams in the FIFA rankings were all in action over the weekend in various ways. San Marino, who are bottom, haven't won a game for 21 years. They decided they would bring in one of the other worst teams. They invited St Kitts and Nevis to play them. Sure enough, they got one goal up from a penalty. I needn't tell you the final score was San Marino 1, St Kitts and Nevis 3.
Oh,
but the two teams above them, second worst and third worst in the rankings, are the Virgin Islands, the US Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands. Now, they were meeting in a World Cup qualifier. Previously, they've met eight times. Three wins each, two draws. So everything is on this big derby. The American Virgin Islands scored first. It got to the 98th minute before, and you know what I'm going to say next, there was an equaliser for the British Virgin Islands, scored by a man called Hugo Lozario, but made by Tyler Forbes, who plays for Weymouth in the same league as Torquay United. initially, the goal was given to Tyler Forbes, and I was even more excited about it, that somebody from the National League South had scored an international goal of great importance. But no, it was only the assister. And of course, the result being a draw means both of them stay right down the bottom of the FIFA rankings, which I'm always very, very interested in.
We're going to be chatting later on to Andy Brassel about the...
What did you think was the connection, by the way?
Torquay United.
Weymouth are 14th. I'll be exact with you. Weymouth are 14th in National League South, and yet one of their players is doing important things on his national stage.
Fantastic. Yes, we're going to talk about the Basque Country who played Uruguay yesterday. We're going to be chatting about that with Andy Brassel. But for now, Danny, back to the bread and butter of the Premier League. Next Monday, we'll catch up with you then. When are you returning to Talk Sport? I take it you'll be
tonight at 7 o'clock.
Wow, it's a quick return.
Darren Lewis has deserted us for the SJA Awards, where I'm sure Talk Sport are going to sweep the board. And so it's just me and Danny Murphy, the two Dannys getting stuck. Well, the other two Dannys getting stuck into all the football from over the weekend and beyond. It should be good.
It would be great if Danny Murphy came in and set a kind of Danny Baker-like agenda with you. That would be quite interesting. It's out of nowhere.
I have a suspicion those days of radio may be behind us, Paul. I don't know what you think. Having said that, on through the nights on Friday, Saturday here on TalkSport, I did spend a lot of time discussing cartoon bears.
Well, that's good. Of course you did. Well, someone's still flying the flag. That's the important thing. Cheers, Danny. All the best.
Bye-bye now.
Danny Kelly back with Danny Murphy tonight from 7 o'clock.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. And on a recent visit to Buenos Aires, Andy came back telling us tales of his trip to the River Plate Stadium, didn't you?
It was a bucket list moment.
Yeah.
I finally got to see the Super Classico, courtesy of our next guest who arranged it all. I was delighted and showed me around the stadium. And it was an amazing thing. And he told me he was coming to London. So I said, you've got to come on the show.
Ignacio Villarreal is the vice president of River Plate. And as Andy says, he joins us in the studio. Good afternoon, Ignacio.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you. What brings you to the UK?
Well, football. Always football. Yes. Well, first of all, thank Andy, Paul for the invitation. I'm here because tomorrow I'm going to have a lecture and a seminar. It's called Coalition at the Tottenham Stadium.
Right.
Talking about venues, yes. Tomorrow will be my turn, so I'm going to give a speech about River, passion, innovation, and venues.
Yeah.
Because you've just changed the stadium in the last couple of years, haven't you? And it now holds 86,000. It's an incredible place. And everybody's much nearer the pitch than they used to be.
That's true. That's true. Our stadium is for 1938. We started last year with the renovation, the renewal of the stadium. Now it's the biggest stadium in South America. 86,000 people could be at a stadium. We take out the like it was like a, how you say in English?
Running track.
A running track. Mm-hmm. And now you are, I mean, before that, the distance between the stands and the pitch was 35 meters. Now it's only 12. So we are really proud about our stadium. All the new seats, they come from England, from London, from the Tottenham Stadium. They're the same company.
Ah.
So we have two new screens, new suites, a restaurant in the stadium, Wi-Fi during the matches. I mean, new parking slots, around 2,000 cars for the members or supporters of River Plate. Yeah. So we are really, really proud about our stadium, and we hope to have a very good year talking about sports.
Brilliant. How many socios do you have at the club, Ignacio?
Well, now we have 350,000 members.
Wow.
Which we became the biggest club in the world with regarding members.
Not all of those can go to the game.
No, you
need a bigger stadium.
We have, with season tickets, we have 50,000.
Right.
So we sell 13 tickets each match.
Mm.
And of course, we have 5,000 of commercial tickets for sponsors or whatever.
Yeah.
The two big clubs in Argentina are world clubs. So you must be really looking forward to the Club World Cup. It's a great opportunity for both of you to show where you are in world football.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be a very good opportunity for us. The Copa Libertadores is always a very big opportunity as well. Because now we have several players playing the big leagues. I mean, we have here in England Enzo Fernandez and Julian Alvarez, and even in Spain, France, or Italy. So always you have River players going around. We have now Echeverri, who is 18 years old, was...
City have gone from, haven't they?
From City.
It was interesting speaking to you in Buenos Aires. I sort of noticed that you had a kind of sense of pride of this, that you're producing these players that are playing for the big, big clubs in Europe. But it must be frustrating as well, in a sense, that to always lose your best players. I mean, it's difficult. I know it's your kind of financial model.
No, it's like this. I mean, we produce players, and we know that one day those players are going to be playing here in Europe, and it's part of the history. I mean, we cannot change that. But we are proud of that. Mm. We are proud of not our history with Aymar, Saviola, Crespo, Higuain, Mascherano, players formed in River, and the future. Echeverri, Mastantuono, Roberto. I mean, it's part of real play history.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day when Argentina won the World Cup, the core of players were from River. There was a lot of players, wasn't it? Sort of Passarella, Pompidou, players, etc. You know, players a bit later on I'm talking about, but World Cup winners that stayed at the club.
Well, you know what? All River Plate is the club who more provide players to our national team. Was Filiol, was Passarella, it was Mario Alberto Kempes, it was Pompidou, Ruggeri, and the last World Cup with Franco Armani, which is our goalkeeper, which was the only guy from Argentina from the National League playing the World Cup, and of course Pesela, Guido Rodriguez, Julian Alvarez, Enzo Fernandez, most of them.
Latest player we've been reading about is a young player, Franco Mastantuono, that a lot of clubs are looking at. There's a lot of stories over here that Real Madrid is showing an interest in him, and he's the next potentially big star, along with Echeverri, from your point of view.
Apparently, yes. I mean, He's 16 years old.
Wow.
That's young.
He's very, very young. But he was, for instance, the nowadays he's called in the end of January or maybe February, and he's the youngest scorer in our history, and he's an amazing player, he's an amazing guy, he's a very well tennis player as well. And so we'll see. But
what's your attitude to players leaving very early? Do you kind of counsel them? Do you talk to them about that? I mean, we're seeing Endrick now at 17, scored at the weekend for Brazil, coming over to Real Madrid. Sometimes there's a feeling maybe they're coming that little bit too early. It doesn't allow them that chance. They're not quite old enough, mature enough to settle in another part of the world.
Yeah, we talk a lot about that because, I mean, it's not easy. You are 16, 17, maybe 18 years old, and you have to change everything, your family, your culture, your way of living. We talk about a lot. We talk as part of the club. We have psychologists working with them, the coaches working with them, the agents, they're very, very important as well. No, the two, I mean, not to go so fast. No? I mean, the most important thing, well, you know what? River is more than football. We have a school, we have an university, a primary school, high school, and these guys are going to our school. So they know, like Echeverri or even Mastantuono, they know that they have time. Of course, the market is the market. Of course, if City, Real Madrid, PSG, I mean, it comes. Mm. But slow.
Yeah, a good team, the school football team.
Yeah.
Now, your English is great, and I know you spent time here, and you've got a love of English football too, haven't you?
Yeah.
And one club in particular, I might add.
Oh, okay. I wonder what that is, the way you brought that up. So it's your team then?
Here?
Yes.
Well, you know what? When I was 22 years old, I was working here as a lawyer, and my club was Chelsea.
Right.
Of course. And because of Andy. But yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of weekends because I was living in Parsons Green. Mm-hmm. So going to the Stamford Bridge Stadium, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. We see a lot of teams from Europe sort of heading over and playing in sort of big pre-season tournaments. I mean, would you like to take River on the road? Would you like to bring them over here for a tournament, say, with Arsenal or Chelsea or something like that?
We already had a tournament in Holland with Arsenal. It was like Adidas Cup many years ago. And we are planning now to have another one with European clubs. Yes, of course. Mm. It will be quite interesting that not only to have the World Cup, if not to have this kind of tournament, who allow us to share, I mean, European and South American clubs. We are working on that.
Yeah. I mean, because...
Not only for, I mean, our first team, if not as well of the legends.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be good.
We are working...
The brand is so iconic. I mean, the shirt, again, the Boca River rivalry.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that was... Well, I went alphabetically, I made that mistake. But that rivalry is so fierce. Everybody knows that. And the shirt, the white shirt with the red sash, it's so iconic. I would imagine, from a marketing point of view, you sell an awful lot of shirts abroad as a kind of fashion item, don't you? So to grow the brand sort of globally, to come over here and play games or head around Europe, Spain, Italy, would be good for business. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we cannot forget that we have the River Boca at the Bernabeu Stadium for the final of the Copa Libertadores.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't for a great reason.
For me, as a fan, as a member, as a part of the board of River Plate, it was my best night in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, we had... Imagine you, Chelsea against
Tottenham.
Yeah.
Tottenham in Wembley or Bernabeu Stadium, the final of the champions. I mean, it's amazing. We won,
Of course.
And you're having a good season. You're top of the league currently, isn't it?
We are now top of the league, yes. We are going to start next week the Copa Libertadores. We have a long flight to Venezuela, and then we have a team from Nacional from Uruguay and Libertad from Paraguay. It's like here. I mean, the Copa Libertadores in South America is the most important thing. Mm. But of course, we are playing again at the same time our National League. We are top of the league, so everything is okay. But we are only in March.
Right.
Good stuff.
Fantastic.
That's it.
Well, fascinating. Really good to see you. Enjoy your down at the Tottenham Stadium tomorrow. That sounds really interesting. And
it's a beautiful stadium. Pains me to say it.
No, it's an amazing stadium. Yes, of course, an amazing stadium. I was already last year there. But let me. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What did you feel in the River Boca? The atmosphere.
It's unparalleled. I mean, the atmosphere is just incredible. I've never heard anything like it. When Boca came out to warm up and the River fans let them have it, I've never heard it. I thought my ears were going to bleed.
Whistling, was it?
The whistling.
Yeah.
It was amazing, but it was incredible. At the same time, there's big strips of plastic. I know from putting stuff on Instagram that it is on so many fans' bucket lists. People who go to Buenos Aires, they want it. It's not always easy to get a ticket for that. But generally, you know, other games you can go to, and I recommend it to people.
And you don't have away fans, so Boca fans don't come to River, and River fans don't come to Boca, do they?
No, unfortunately. It's a measure was taken 10 years ago. It's a pity.
It is a pity.
Because I had experience with the two supporters, and it's amazing. It's something, even the Boca Stadium, even the River Stadium, is something amazing. Well, at the Bernabeu, we had the two supporters, and it was amazing. One day, maybe, when the violence came down, maybe one day we're going to have the two supporters.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We're joined in the studio by a comedian, documentary maker, author, AFC Wimbledon fan.
Tipping Point winner.
Tipping Point champion. That's right, Jeff Norcott. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, mate. Well, the thing is, you try and flog this documentary for ages, then a two-year-old repeat of Tipping Point goes on the night before and you get recognised more than you have in years. I think everyone was watching telly last night.
So it was a two-year-old one. It wasn't even a recent record. No.
Well, yeah, I mean, it felt fresh to me. You know, I don't want to knock the good people at ITV, but I think when it was on before, it was on in the summer, and it was on about 5 p.m. So no one saw it. Suddenly the phone's going. I'm thinking, what's going on? Have I been cancelled?
$8,000 for charity. It's got to be good.
Yes.
So your documentary, which is now on the iPlayer, you were facing the dilemma of your son and wondering whether you should encourage him to go to university or not, and then kind of off the back of that, you started to think about that there was a documentary and this idea of of is it still a good idea to go to university with everything that's going on at the moment?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things that's really changed in a way. I thought I went to university and I was the first in my family and that was a proud moment and stuff. And I thought it was notable that within one generation, my thinking on it had pretty much done like a 180. And I sort of thought, what I don't want to be with my son is a bit like, you know, when your parents were sort of saying, oh, you've got to go to this seaside town. And then you go there, you go, it's changed a lot in 35 years. You know, and then to not acknowledge the way that the university deal has changed for young people, you know, in terms of how much it costs first and foremost, you know, whether or not the grades are perceived to have the same value as they did. You know, I sort of thought, I think that a lot of people's brains are already moving in this direction. It would be good to do a film on it. But, you know, being a comic, there are hopefully funny moments in it. There's little bits of stand-up here and there. But it's a balancing act, isn't it? Because the thing is, the people that like documentaries, if you do too many jokes, they go, what's this idiot? Why is he he's showing off, you know? And then if I didn't do enough jokes, you know, people would ask why I was doing it. So hopefully we got the balance right. It got some nice it's on iPlayer, available to watch now, but I got a good write up in The Guardian and The Mail.
Blimey, okay.
Well, it's like when I see
both
a good
rooms.
When I see a good write up in The Guardian, I thought, hang on, you know, it's actually a cause for concern. But no, it's nice. It generally got a really good reaction in the press, and I think that, you know, it's a conversation starter for a lot of people that have got young people in their family. You know, just, it's not saying that university is suddenly the worst idea in the world, but I think the deal's changed.
It's you know, a huge debt, isn't it, you find yourself with these days. You said the cost of living means it's a whole lot more expensive to go and
is
do
the
that.
Degree vocational? Is it going to lead to anything?
I mean, this is a problem. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things I spoke about in the film is, of course, we don't want to view all of this through the prism of, like, what does it cost? What will you earn?
Yeah.
But I was acutely conscious that in my life, most of my wealthiest mates have got their name on the side of a van. You know, like they've got trades. I've never met a plumber who wasn't as busy as he wanted to be, or in Turkey. They seem to be in Turkey a lot.
Right.
So they have good lives.
Like plumbing or just on holiday?
Plumbing, yeah, yeah. Like the UEFA Champions League of plumbing. You know? An away game in Trabzonspor. fixing some pipes. But I just thought, like, you know, that's a good job. And I felt like in the noughties, we lost sight of that. I was a teacher during the noughties, and I was part of the Blair education there. And you think, well, right now, I look in my family, and we've got a younger nephew in our family, a scaffolder, and he's earning over 50 grand a year. Now, he deserves that. It's hard work, and, you know, he's sort of passing thresholds of knowledge and stuff like that. And I just think maybe the deal has changed, particularly, I'd say, in the last 10 years. When the debt was, like, 20 grand, I mean, obviously, that's still a lot of money, but you could say, all right, go study your passion. Once it gets to 45, 50 grand, as a family, I don't know, maybe it's more of a working class thing, you go, all right, maybe we need to have more of a detailed discussion about this, because they always say, well, you won't pay off until you earn at a certain threshold. But that seems like sort of like the poverty of low expectations, really. It's not really what you want to be hearing. And as you say, like, you know, the benefit, there is a net benefit for students still, but that skews heavily towards certain vocations, courses, red brick institutions and stuff. So, you know, it's about having a more honest dialogue with young people.
I mean, how easy is it to walk into those trades, Jeff? Is that something you looked at? Because it is, go and be a plumber, but how easy is it to become a plumber?
Yeah, look, no, it'd be dishonest to say that apprenticeships are free and available to everybody, but there are more than there used to be. You know, the government have lent more that way, and I presume even if there's a change of government, we will continue further along that path. But in the film, I went and spent a day with a great group of lads in Hull called Soprano Plumbers, and they were
a great name. Yeah,
they were exactly what you think, by the way, Andy. Soprani, but you know, real motivated, aspirational, and they're training up apprentices. And you know, I got to spend a day with them where I actually did some of the labour. And look, I'm pretty cack-handed with that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, there was a radiator on a wall, and I just thought, God, that's like a satisfying thing. And I don't know why there was this weird period that sort of seemed to stem from the mid 90s till about maybe COVID, where we forgot what a noble and actually creative profession it can be to build and fix things.
Yeah,
I'm sort of obsessed with my son becoming a plumber, basically. Yeah.
He's bought him his own rods already.
I keep showing him the Super Mario film.
Yeah. But what price the university experience? Because I never got that, and I think it sounds fun. I mean, it does sound...
That's right. It's what the sort of person you come out at the end of it, hopefully, and you know what you learn from that experience as, you know, as a human being. As much
well,
as anything
no, else. That absolutely has merit, and I think that I'm not sure. It's uncomfortable for me in a way, because on the one hand, the natural conclusion of some of what I'm saying is it goes away from the arts and the humanities and language, which is what I'm interested in. And what I studied. But the way that the financial deal has changed so much, I mean, if you look at how the grades are perceived, like this issue of grade inflation. So between 2010 and 2020, the number of people getting a first doubled. Now, we'd all love to believe that's because people got double intelligent. Like Mickey Flanagan's double busy walk. They get double revision on, you know. But part of that, you know, a lot of people do suspect that that's because kids are paying for it. You know, they're appealing grades. But the net effect for that is in the workplace that then affects the perception of what a degree is worth, you know, in the first place.
So it's available on the iPlayer. It was out on BBC Two, but is university really worth it? Jeff's documentary. Go and download it and watch on the iPlayer now. Now, at the start of this month, Jeff, as an AFC Wimbledon fan, you had as good a moment as you can possibly have. The other lot, I mean, even they were late.
Don't mention the name.
They were late for the game, the other lot.
Yeah.
We're going to have to mention it because some people won't get this. MK Dons. They were late for the game, but the website, I was looking at the website at the time, it said the other team are stuck in traffic. They can't even bring themselves to mention their name. But they came down to your place and you beat them at your stadium with a last minute, last second winner.
Yeah, 94th minute of injury time. Ronan Curtis. We haven't had great results against them. They've beaten us a lot, which seems like... I don't want to like question my faith on the basis of football, but you do wonder sometimes, like on a moral basis. And it was just so poetic the whole day, because one of the rationale for them moving up to Buckinghamshire was like, well, it's not that far. It's only like 50 miles, 70 kilometres or whatever. But then they literally couldn't find their way to Wimbledon. You know what I mean? Like, if you'd been from Wimbledon, you might have known a better route. So then they come out. I think they warmed up in the other side of the pitch, which started the kind of cantankerousness. And it's fair to say that my lads, they celebrated it to the victory to its fullest, but it has resulted in a bit of an FA fine.
It has. 8,000 for Wimbledon. Don's got 2,500. The one I love was Harry Pell, the midfielder of Wimbledon, was an unused sub. He got a £1,000 fine and a one-match ban for admitting that he was kicking balls at visiting fans during the warm-up.
Well, this was part of... Look, I'm not condoning kicking balls at visiting fans, but what happened was they went and warmed up in our half, so then our players were warming up in front of their away fans. They were getting grief. And I mean, if you see the video footage, I wouldn't... Like, he wasn't, like, powering it. He was chipping it. You shouldn't necessarily do this, I would say this, that all of the fines, the way that our fans feel about that particular situation, the club won't be paying them. I'm good. I'm already trying to find out how to donate myself. So, as we've often the case with
the crowdfund it.
With the team from Buckinghamshire is that, you know, what they tend to do is unite us in a weird way. So I would say that there's every chance that there'll be money left over for our transfer budget. It was in itself just winning in that way. They're above us in the table. You know, there is every chance that they'll get promoted this season.
You'll miss the derbies, will you? I'm sure.
No. We don't want to play him. I mean, it's not like a normal rivalry. It's not. Like, we don't think they should exist. That's not the same. You don't get out of Everton Liverpool. They don't sort of.
Think that about Arsenal.
Yeah. There's probably people all around the country going, "Yeah, we've got a world without Spurs, a world without Arsenal." But it's more profound than that. And the other thing is like, you know, we just haven't had great results against them. So some of us were looking when we were looking more likely to be in the playoffs, thinking, God, we had one over on them, and then if we get in the playoffs and it went the other way, that would be hard to take. But just as a moment, I mean, if anyone wants to search online and see the outpouring of emotion, it really was. It's a coin of cliche what football's all about.
Everybody, all the players diving into the crowd.
The ball boy as well.
Yeah, the ball boy, yeah.
People were inquiring after the ball boy.
Because you know there's no way back. Basically, it's one of those where they restart the game and they blow the whistle, don't they?
Yeah, it really was. I think they had one foot of forward movement. I scared the dog so much because I was actually in the I had a tour show that I was leaving for, and I made this guttural scream, and the dogs came running in like, right, who are we fighting, who's the burglar? And then I had to leave the house shortly after that, and my neighbour just looked at me like, everything alright?
are you still on tour?
Yeah, I'll be on tour till the end of April, the Basic Bloke Tour, which has been luckily at the weekend I was in Crewe, so I managed to stick around and watch the match there. I've got dates coming up in Wellingborough, Ilkley, Dublin. I'm playing, see, a lot of these comics now, right, they want to play Soho and all the trendy places and the Apollo. I am playing the new Wimbledon Theatre, because that for me, that's where I saw Christopher Biggins. as a kid. That's where I saw Sandra Dickinson, Leslie Grantham, all the greats.
In Panto.
It's your home ground.
It is. It was my home game. So, yeah. Like, I, look, on a
Are you playing Milton Keynes?
I did. You know, the great irony for me is that it's one of my best selling places that I saw.
Really?
And I don't know if that's the people of Milton Keynes lightly trolling me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I played it in. It's
making you come back year yeah, after
it,
year.
So, look, I've got nothing against the people of Milton Keynes.
No, of course
not. It's the club that happened to be there. But yeah, the Wimbledon date is the only London date of the tour. I'd probably make more money if I did it in the centre of town. But I think, you know, just there's something. I played it on the last tour, and there's something magical about, you know, going back to somewhere that you saw shows as a kid.
Brilliant. Go and check out jeffnorcott.co.uk for all those dates. And University, is it really worth it, as we said, on the iPlayer now.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
It says, my friend Craig used to punch himself in the nose in every geography lesson at school. So me and him could spend half an hour at the medical room. Full-blown pelt.
That's
too
ridiculous.
Surely the geography teacher realised when all the claret started pouring every week that he was probably doing it to himself. I don't know. But anyway, we will talk more about that, mainly on F1, a little bit later on. Is there anything you want to share with the class, Andy? You want to talk a bit of telly?
Well, we're going to talk a bit of telly, yes. I mean, nothing really.
Nothing's really stood out for you?
Yeah, no, nothing really.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I'm going to Reader's Trousers, but you don't care about that.
Reader's Trousers, we'll come back to those. Conor Roberts' lucky moustache, we'll be talking about that tomorrow in the build-up to the Wales-Poland game. And we're going to bring you England-Belgium as well.
A lot of people talking about Magnum again.
Yes, that's right. He's got him back in the news.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, there we are. That's how it all unfolded this afternoon. I will be back tomorrow with Charlie Baker. Andy, you'll be back on Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday.
Fantastic. We're building up to Wales in that big playoff game against Poland. England-Belgium tomorrow. I do hope you can join us. If not, podcast available at 4.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.